This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with Bolt Cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom.
Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement as due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey there, everybody. Good morning. Happy Friday to you. Late night. Who's sleepy? Very late night with the Sweet 16, but here we are. We'll get into all of it today on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester. Glad to be here with you. As we wrap up the week and get ready for a busy sports weekend, we have all kinds of ways you can get in touch with the program. You can call us the good old-fashioned way at 869-1240. Max Power in studio taking those calls. You can reach out to us on our video streams, which are available on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Of course, thank you to everybody watching us on 12 News Plus, 12 News Connected. And you can listen to us on the Odyssey app, as so many of you do, and you can leave us voice messages there with the little microphone. That's super easy, and we can get to those anytime. Even if it's a day later, if you're listening to us a day later, we can get to those. We're happy to do it. Glad you're here with us. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester. Tommy, did you stay up late last night? How late did you stay up?
I didn't make it to the Texas Tech comeback. I saw that this morning when I got up. I tried. I tried as hard as I could. I could not stay up that late. You had more of an excuse than I did. You had enjoyed some beverages earlier in the evening. I just was tired. So
we'll say thanks to Crestview Country Club right off the top here. They wine, big wine tasting last night, which is not my cup of tea.
Not your cup of wine, your glass of wine.
Yeah. But it was good. It was fun. Look, it was impressive.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, like, if you're a wine drinker, these are the kinds of events we tell you about with Crestview, our great sponsor on the program here, because there was a full table of people, this guy that is saying words that I don't know the meaning of and describing grapes and the process and all of this stuff to, there were probably 30, 40 people there. And it was great. Like, I learned a lot about wine. Don't know what I was learning necessarily, but, you know, there were a couple of them I liked, a couple of them I didn't like, drank them anyway, and cleaned up the leftovers from everybody else at the table. So, you know, it was good. It was good.
You are. You're the definition
of a lot of wine.
You're the definition of the Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack. Like, you're the guy showing up to Bushwood and, you know, like, just shaking things up a little bit.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I thought one of the wines smelled a little like BO. I don't know that everybody wanted to hear that, but you know, I didn't like that one. I like some of the other ones.
Giving that one your ringing endorsement then.
That one was not. Yeah. And it was the most controversial, if you'll like.
Was it a Chardonnay?
Oh man. No, it was red.
Oh, okay. It was
red. But I don't know what. It was red. I don't know what kind of red. But it was pretty wild one. But some people like loved it, and some people like me didn't like
that probably nearly as much. The BO one was probably, I'm just guessing, the one that your wife liked the most, is my guess.
No. It was even a little.
Because she likes BO. That's not. I'm saying, like, right. I've gone to a wine tasting with her.
She's got a totally different.
Her palate. Her palate is wet. She loves IPAs. I can't do that.
So. I think she liked some of the other ones better. And then there was this like champagne one. It was way too sweet, but man, it was good. And that was cool. Like to learn how that's made and how they get the bubbles in there. Whatever. It was fun. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about Crestview and how much we enjoy it. Those kinds of events, so much more than just going out and playing golf, which is also great, which I really wanted to do yesterday. And I know you'll do this weekend, and I don't think I'm going to have a chance. And like today, I'm like, oh man, I have a chance, but the wind's blowing 25 miles per hour. Maybe I'll just hit the simulator instead. So give Crestview a call, ask them about those memberships. It's events like that, that I think we honestly enjoy as much as anything. It was super fun. And if you know, the wine drinkers, that was a heck of an event. Just like really high quality, high class stuff. You know, for me, grew up on Franzia out of the fridge in a box. It was a good experience.
Yeah. A little Boone's Farm action. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that at all. That's me and Max out there sipping on the Boone's Farm back in the day. Isn't that right, Max? The Boone's Farm guy.
He's just shaking his head no.
Oh, well, I'll be me by myself then, and that's just fine. All right, so if you did stay up late, which I had a little too much wine to stay up late, I couldn't do it. You got a tremendous ending to the Tech Arkansas game. So I tried to stick with it for Arizona's sake because they were sticking around with Duke, and for Tech's sake because – I'm wanting the Big 12 to do good. I kind of root for Tech. Man, like there was a point where I was like, nope, Tech is going to have one of these unlucky games where a team that cannot shoot is shooting the lights out. And this happens in the tournament and it's a major bummer. And then I was watching Cooper Flagg do Cooper Flagg things. And I'm like, good Lord, like you're just not going to be able to find an answer for him. Well, Arizona kept it close. And then Texas Tech had the crazy one. It was probably about the time I gave up when they made a comeback. It was down like 16 at one point in the second half and 13 with 5 minutes to go. And then finally the law of averages played itself out in that game a little bit. And Arkansas, who was shooting the lights out, they still finished 10 of 25. Like Arkansas, if we just said Arkansas is going to make 10 threes, we thought Tech would be in big trouble. And Tech didn't shoot them very well either. And Tech's a good shooting team. That got flipped around, but I think it tells you how good Tech is that they were still able to stretch that game out. They got it into overtime. They got things settled in. I don't know that people realize, like, Texas Tech doesn't even have one of, if not their best shooter right now, and haven't for a long time. That's how good they are. And they got it done, and I'm really glad they did because I think they're awesome.
Well, they also saved the Big 12 from a disastrous night last night with BYU losing, and then, of course, Arizona losing. It took that massive comeback for Texas Tech to at least get the Big 12 on the board in the first night of the Sweet 16 matchups. There was a lot of offense last night. I mean, basically in every single game, a lot of offense. I mean, Alabama... Come on, 113 Dude. Points. They hit the 100 mark with like 7 minutes to go in the game. It was ridiculous. And BYU shot the ball really well, too. Like, the fact that they put up 88 points and still lost by 25 is wild to me. Just insane.
Well, it's what we worried about with Alabama. Like, BYU got a tough draw, honestly. Like, I would have loved BYU more had they made it to any other region, because they sat there and they stared in the face of Wisconsin early, right, which they took care of, but Wisconsin, Alabama, Duke, like all these offensive juggernauts, and it's like, well, that's what BYU does. Like, you kind of wanted to see them come in and play a team that can't shoot as well. So, but I mean, Alabama, my Lord, 25 of 51.
Yeah. Right. Really?
We don't ever see that. Yeah. That's like,
it was like an NBA game. It looked like an NBA game last night out there. And I'm watching now, all the games had great offenses, but I'm watching the BYU Alabama game. And I'm like, I'm just thinking about Kansas as the preseason number one. I'm like, man, like they would have gotten blown out of the water. It's a different brand of basketball entirely. With any team, like any team that played
Duke
last night,
would have gotten blown out of the water.
Yeah, well, like, my point is that it's a completely different brand of basketball than what the Jayhawks have been playing this entire year versus honestly any other team that was playing last night. It was kind of refreshing to see like big offenses last night.
25-30 record, 35-year-old record. And I thought Tech was going to run into the same sort of buzzsaw, but they didn't. They got it done. They represent the Big 12. We'll talk about the rest of it. We'll talk about the Royals opening day. Don't go away.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Hello, young lovers. Won't you try some good cold Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill?
Oh, yeah, great.
Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. It captures the taste of fresh strawberries. Now, doesn't that wine taste good?
You're right, Grandma.
Delicious.
Where'd you go?
Look, she left the Strawberry Hill.
And it's Strawberry Hill forever.
See that, Tommy? It's fact. They made a commercial about it.
I love Boone's Farm. I've always loved Boone's Farm.
Max messages me about Boone's Farm. He's like, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of, what did you call it, Max? It's kind of funny and dumb. And yeah, I'm like, well.
Takes off on a Harley, kind of, like Evel Knievel.
Yeah, funny and dumb kind of fits us, fits this show. If we, you know, if we died tomorrow and people are like, oh, they had this radio show, it's really kind of funny and dumb. I'd feel like we've done our jobs. So there you go. No Boone's Farm last night. Only the finest wines, I'm sure, at Crestview at the wine tasting. I didn't even know when this got signed up. I didn't know Tommy and his wife weren't going to be there. And I'm like, you're going to send me in there by myself with my wife? She's going to hate me. But I did good. Did fine.
I'm glad. I mean the last wine tasting, I have to say, I went with my wife and your wife. So, and you didn't go. So this is kind of retribution, kind of payback.
Yeah. No, it's good. It was good. Let's talk a little Royals baseball here, Tommy. We'll go back to basketball. We'll look ahead. We've got Jalen Thompson also to talk Royals in the second hour, a Royals insider. It was also opening day. We briefly touched on the basketball yesterday, but it was opening day. I mean, for all that celebrate, it was opening day, right? That was a frustrating one for the Royals, who put themselves in position. A Vinny Pasquantino bomb. You'd have liked to see more offense manufactured. They certainly had their chances late, and they did not take advantage. But I found it pretty interesting that when we talked yesterday and all offseason about this rebuilt bullpen and how everything's looking great, it's Zerpa and Long, two of the older guys that can't get it done for the Royals. Now, Long, it's not fair because he comes in extra innings and they get the ghost runner. I don't ever hold that really against relievers anymore. But Zerpa, one dang pitch, Tommy, one pitch. And it's just like, all right, there that goes. I thought Reagans was fine. He had a little bit of bad luck in a couple of spots early in the game. But all in all, it's not that big a deal, a 7-4 loss to the Guardians. I did think it was funny. I was like, man, it had to be one of the old bullpen guys.
Well, and
I just had to remind us.
I know it was his very first pitch. It wasn't a bad pitch. It wasn't. And, you know, so that was a little bit of bad luck, I think, for Zerpa. Also, I felt like, you know, I hate on opening day criticizing, you know, Matt Quatrero and the use of
It was a fine place to use Zerpa. They got to use Zerpa this year.
That's not my point. My point is that I wish that they would have not brought Reagans back out to start the sixth. I wish they would have started the inning with Zerpa. If they were going to go to the pen, because, you know, Reagans was fine through five innings. He wasn't fantastic, but he was fine. But after five, you know, I'm kind of like, all right, like it hasn't been like a stellar outing for Reagans, and five innings is good. And he's been able to keep him, you know, in the ballgame and with the lead and all of that. Like at that point, you have this like stacked bullpen that you love, that you're really optimistic about, that have tons of reinforcements. On opening day with your starting pitcher that hasn't been, like, I think it's fair to say he didn't have his best stuff. He was okay, but didn't have his best stuff. I think five innings is good, and then you go to the bullpen after that. I wish they wouldn't have brought him back out for the sixth because, you know, you have no outs, and then you have runners on, and then Zerpa comes in first pitch, gives up that home run. That was unfortunate.
And it was to a guy that you don't expect to do it. I don't want to read too much into it again, but I do think – we're still certainly going to look at this glass half full. Ursic, Harvey, and Estevez were great. And like that's some combination of that looks most likely to be how the back end of games will finish. I think the biggest question will be how does it get deployed to get to that, right? Because again, we've talked a million times, like to expect what we got out of the starting pitching last year again this year, it's unreasonable. Like, that is unreasonable to expect that. Maybe they can, but it's just not very likely. And so there are going to be a lot of games probably where you have to get to the seventh inning and your starter's going to give you five. Now, what do you do in that spot? And I think that will be the interesting thing to see out of the bullpen. Like last night, for example, with a runner on, when they did make the decision, is that the spot that you use Ursic, right? Is Ursic strictly going to go later, or is Ursic just going to always inherit base runners, right? Like, or mostly inherit base. I think that's a question they'll have to ask. I think, you know, they've got plenty of lefties back there, which is what they were trying to do last night. So it's like, okay, they still have MacArthur. They still have plenty of arms to utilize that way. That part of it will be very interesting. And we'll talk to Jalen Thompson about that. See if he got any indication in the spring. I don't think he did, but maybe he has an idea based on what's being said in the locker room, but that'll be the way. But, and Rick points this out, and I agree, Rick, blame base running, not bullpen.
That was a huge blunder. That was a huge mistake.
Royals had their chances at this thing. I was more discouraged by the lack of run production than I was a pitch that got out on Zerpa, because the Royals had plenty of chances, and outside of Vinny Pasquantino, they couldn't do anything with them.
Well, right? they would have won the game, you know, had there not been, in my opinion, had there not been that base running blunder with Darren Blanco and Kyle Isbell. I mean, there's no way you can turn that into two outs. And that wasn't like the Guardians did anything amazing. That was a mistake by Kyle Isbell. Honestly, Blanco probably shouldn't have taken off, you know, on contact. But the two mistakes right there, like on opening day, you can't have that. You can't have those kind of mental mistakes.
There's nobody out.
Right, exactly.
Right? You didn't need to do that.
Right, 100%.
And so that's the more – and it's not even just that. That sucks too. But like Jonathan India was terrible yesterday at the plate. 0 for 5, left four dudes out there. I can't have that for the new leadoff hitter, right? You got to be better than that. You got to do something. Got to be productive. That's why he's there. At least he'll be productive, right? Get on base. So those types of little things. Bobby Witt Jr. struck out three times. Salvador Perez struck out twice. Like, those are the things, that the reason the Royals lost the game. Vinny Pasquantino was great, though, which was great to see. And it's one game, and it's not that big a deal. And
he looks
yes,
healthy.
There are little things to take out of it. So the Royals get into that weird thing here where you – and it's mostly the outdoor stadiums, I think, that do this. Baseball builds in basically a, oh, crap weather moment. So they don't play today. And they do that so that if something happened yesterday, they could have moved it to today. But they won't play today. And then they'll play again Saturday and Sunday, both afternoon games. So we'll we'll keep our eye on that. But, you know, all in all, it was a good energy, I thought. I mean, Tommy, we've skipped the elephant in the room here. And I have found myself in the minority on this, and I can't believe it. Those hats.
Oh, I love them. I think they're phenomenal. Oh. I think they're great. I loved the all powder blue look. I love the all powder blue. I love the white hats, with the throwback logo on it. I'm a fan of that fit. I think it's fantastic.
I love the all powder blue. Those hats suck.
No, they don't. Like they're awesome because they've got
They don't fit anybody right. The logo's too small. What are they anyway? Like, why do we need alternate hats in baseball? We don't need alternate hats in baseball. But the Royals have a great hat, and that regular hat would have looked great with those powder blues. What are we doing with it? If you want to do that hat in like a City Connect thing, fine.
I think it looks amazing because I love the Dodgers,
the Yankees, they're running out alternate hats.
No, but the Dodgers certainly were wearing their golds last night.
Well, that's what every champion.
Well, I'm telling you, this is the world that we're in where you're going to have alternate everything. And I'm willing, even if I thought those white hats weren't great, which I actually do like them, but even if I thought they weren't great, but that was the trade-off, wear those white hats to get the all-powder blues, count me in. Like, I will make that sacrifice.
Just wear the blue hats with
I don't know. Why don't you just wear a powder blue hat then? Like, they've got powder blue hats.
Wear a powder blue hat, yeah. They also wear that hat. They have that hat.
But
that
I kind of do, and it's really that throwback logo. I love that throwback logo with, you know, the Kaufman crown and the bat. Like, I love
it. It's not
big
enough.
I love it.
It's not big enough. It looks small on the hat. I will say this, and I will concede this as an olive branch to all those people that think I'm crazy, because I might be the only one on this. The helmet looked pretty good.
Helmet looks
like
really
the helmet
good.
Looked better.
Yeah.
So I think it's something physically with those particular hats that's bothering me, because I thought the helmet actually looked okay. So maybe that's what it is. I just like that uniform would be perfect with just the regular Royals hat, though. Like it would look. If you want to wear the hat they wore yesterday, wear it with like a Sunday afternoon with a blue jersey or something. It looks like a spring training hat is what it looks like.
I like it.
I don't know.
I think it's really good. A couple other points with the game yesterday that I think are important to point out. You mentioned Lucas Ursig going back to the bullpen. I thought that I know that it's one game and it's hard to know exactly what the plan is for him. But if it continues, if this sort of trend continues, I like the usage of where Matt Quatrero is deploying him, because it was clear it wasn't about, in my opinion, necessarily runners on base or leverage situations. Quatrero wanted Ursig to face the best hitters in the Guardians lineup. And, you know, so like that's when he came in. He came in the seventh and he took on the heart of that lineup for the Guardians. And so if that ends up kind of being that trend where it's like, look, it doesn't matter what inning it's in. If we're going to the bullpen, if it's the heart of the lineup, if it's the guys that are going to do the most damage, that's where we're going to deploy Lucas Ursig, whether that's in the sixth or maybe even the ninth or anywhere in between. That's what we're going to do. And so I do like that because it wasn't like it was like a high leverage situation necessarily with runners on base and scoring position and things like that. It was like, hey, go get out the top guys in their lineup. And that's what he was able to do. Also, Bobby Witt Jr., you mentioned how he didn't have a great game, and he didn't. He struck out three times. But if it wasn't for him, the Vinny Pasquantino home run wouldn't have happened. He beat out a throw earlier in that inning to extend the inning. It was a ground ball, the shortstop, and he hustled down the line, was safe, and then that set up the Pasquantino home run. So, I mean, that was key for him. And then the thing about Bobby Witt Jr. that we love is that he's impacting the game even when he's not producing well. Like, even when he's not doing the big things, hitting the home runs and doing all of that, like, he is still impacting the game in positive ways.
He's, and a shortstop always will. There was no chance that dude was throwing him out on that play. And that's what you have in your back pocket with Bobby Witt Jr. Like, you can see that pretty, not, I don't want to call it a routine ground ball, but like you, like second he hit that, you're like, nah, he's safe. Like they have no chance to get him out there. And I agree with you on that. I don't want to overreact to anything. Ursig is interesting. Ursig was always going to be one of the most interesting players on this team because he was electric last year. He was awesome down the stretch. And I do agree. It is an interesting way to use him, and I don't. I like it too, to put him in, not just in the, you know, the stickiest situation, but against the other team's best hitters. We got to remember that though with him, because when you're constantly going up against the team's best hitters, like, you're going to get got some. And I think it works with him, because I think his the mental component of his game is strong. And that's a part of what makes him so cool. So that's it. I mean, I'd be on board with it too, because I think he can handle it. You know, you don't want to put guys out there with that chance. You know, baseball, especially with pitchers, it can get in your head. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen with him. So I'm with you. Like, if that's the way they want to use him too, it's fine. I don't care if they use him in the third inning, Tommy. Like, I don't care where they use him. Just use him, right, in those spots. Leave the back end stuff to the other two, to Harvey and Estevez. But if you're going to use Urcic that way, then who's the other guy? I think the same question still lingers. Who is that other guy that's going to step up? And maybe Quatraro just uses Urcic there, right? Like, maybe he does just make it those three guys. But if he is going to pull Urcic into different spots, who becomes that next piece that they need? We know who their lefty specialists are. Is it James MacArthur?
No, I think it's Zerpa. I think it becomes Zerpa in that regard. And who else are you going to look at? I'm like, I'm not going to trust MacArthur in those situations.
I might trust MacArthur early on in the sixth inning or the seventh inning. Zerpa, I think, becomes more of a specialist. Maybe it's Schreiber. Schreiber was really good last year.
I'd be
year
okay with Schreiber. Yeah, I'd be all right with that.
They didn't use him yesterday.
Might be Lynch. I mean, Daniel Lynch, you know, was really, really good to end the season. I know you don't like Daniel Lynch. You're shaking your head at me.
No, I like Daniel Lynch. I don't trust
him. If you go back and you look at the way Daniel Lynch pitched the last 2 months of the season out of the pen, he was outstanding, like nearly flawless. And so if that's something that can continue, you know, then he might be that guy.
It's not that I don't like Daniel Lynch. I really do like Daniel Lynch. It's that we've got a long, you know, we've got a long track record with Daniel Lynch. You know, he was much better last year.
He was really good.
But he only pitched in like 16 games.
He was in the minors and they bring him up.
No, I know.
Out of the pen. And he does really good down the stretch for them.
You're misunderstanding. This is not like, I think Daniel Lynch is great. And I think absolutely he could be that guy. But if you think, and I think this, and I'm pretty sure you do. If you think Daniel Lynch has to be your next option as a starter, you kind of have to leave him in long relief for a little while at least. And that's fine too, because that's an important role. And at least at that point, it lets you kind of see like what he's got now over. I just don't think it's necessary yet to go and put him in the Bubich role of last year. Cause I think that became like a desperation move. I don't think they need to do that yet with Lynch, because I agree with you that in an absolute best case scenario, Lynch is a starter for this organization. Like, that's the best case for them. So him being in long relief right now and sort of the backup to the rotation, which they're going to need at some point, still makes the most sense for me for him. Now, over the course of this season, if they have a clear need back there and he's been pitching effective in long relief, like, yeah, put him back there. Like, as if that's what they needed. I just don't think that's what they need yet on, you know, after game one of the season. I think he's got to be still your backup plan at starter.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And I do think that he's got the chops to, you know, be at least a competent starter in the rotation for the Royals. You know, they're going to have options. If they need, and at some point during the season, they are going to need a spot starter or somebody to fill in or whatever. And they've got options. You know, they've got Lynch, and then, you know, assuming health, if they can get down the season a little bit, you've got Alec Marsh that should be healthy at some point. Kyle Wright is working his way back from injury, and they've got a couple of other guys in the minors that they didn't be put on the major league roster that I think they like a lot too, that could potentially come in and be, you know, a spot starter type guy. So they don't have as much depth as they did last year in the rotation, but they still do have some depth. I don't disagree with you that the best place for Lynch is to be that long reliever and try to be the guy that, you know, can give you what you need if a starter gets in trouble or whatever. But my point is that if they have to have him in more of a high leverage late inning situation, like middle late inning, sixth inning or whatever, I think he's fully capable of doing that.
We're going to talk to our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, about all of this here pretty quick. He'll come up in the next hour. We'll get his thoughts on opening day. What should we be taking away? I don't think a whole lot. I think it is what it is. They had a couple of goofs out there, but man, the good news, like the energy was high. I think this is going to be a special year. I think the fans are just like all in with this team, this organization right now. And I think that's super fun. We also got a slight bit of news from John Sherman that we haven't mentioned yet, that he kind of said they're going to lay out their plan for the ballpark this summer in June or July. So, you know, the speculation that's happened over the last week, I guess I didn't really expect one way or the other and a concrete decision at any particular point, but it sounds like we're going to get one this summer, which is pretty exciting for that organization. Tommy, the basketball was pretty good last night. I think, you know, you had the early session. Like, you can look at it two ways. You saw history with Alabama, you know, a 35-year-old record, the 25 threes. Maybe that's interesting to you. I'd rather see the closer games. And then Florida handled Maryland pretty easily. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's not good. The SEC's flexing on everybody a little bit. But then I do think that evening session was fantastic. Arizona would not go away against Duke, even with Cooper Flagg looking like the best player on the planet and all of these things. He is so stinking good. But so was Caleb Love. A nice little ending for him. That was a good game. And then, of course, we briefly mentioned on the Tech game, which was wild and crazy and outrageous and fun. But it was a good night of basketball. The night session redeemed us. It was on too late. I don't know why. I mean, I guess it has to be on that late, but man, that's late basketball for college basketball, especially.
I mean, I think that every team that won last night has a legitimate chance to win a national championship. There wasn't a winner last night that I looked at and watched their game and thought, I don't know, they're going to have a tough time getting past X, Y, and Z. Like, I think there's a legitimate chance for all four of those teams moving on. Alabama was the most impressive out of all of them, sure. And that doesn't take anything away from Duke. But we know about Duke. Like, what Duke did, Duke has done almost all season. So, like, it's almost, you're kind of used to it by now. Alabama has been rock solid for a long time, but they've been a little bit more under the radar this year. They're not a one seed. They're a two seed. They stumbled a little bit in the course of the regular season. And I've always been a fan of Nate Oates. In fact, I'm on that bandwagon of when the day comes that Bill Self retires, I hope that Kansas calls Nate Oates, because I think his brand of basketball is outstanding and so electric, so explosive, so much fun to watch. And I think he'd be a big winner in Lawrence, but that's kind of a side note. But I've always been a big fan of his. I thought they looked incredibly impressive, and they're a team that I'm not sure going into the game last night against BYU. Remember, I had BYU in my Final Four. I'm not sure a lot of people saw Alabama as a legitimate national title contender before last night. I think people thought they were really good, but maybe a step down from those teams that we've been talking about for so long about potentially winning a national championship. And I think they put it on full display last night that they can go win the championship.
If they shoot like that, they'll beat anybody anytime. Just knowing they're capable of it is something everybody has to think about now.
They're not going to get the benefit of the doubt to just sneak up on somebody from here on out.
No,
you put up 113 in a Sweet 16 game against BYU, who also is a really good shooting team and just a good team in general. You're not sneaking up on anybody from here on out.
Absolutely not. And they've been that, you know, when they beat Auburn, whenever that was, kind of toward the end of the season, right? I don't remember exactly when it was. It's like, okay, like they're legit here. I liked them in the tournament. I thought about putting them in, but it was, you know, the kind of Duke is in their way. So it's like, maybe not. We do have an early line on that game, by the way. We have an early line on these games. Alabama's a 6.5-point dog against Duke. Tech is a 6.5-point dog against Florida. So those are your two lines right now. I kind of like both of the dogs a little bit, just off the hip here. I don't know. Man, that is really hard on Alabama-Duke. Duke's floor feels way higher than Alabama's. But Alabama's ceiling might be the highest in this tournament. So take that for what it's worth, but I'm with you. Any of those teams can win. And that's the way it should be. They're 1, 2, 3 seeds. Like that's, you know, that's the way it should be. I wish Tech could get fully healthy. That, you know, they've been very successful, even not fully healthy. Man, McMillan is such a good shooter. Like, get him back in there. But he's from San Francisco and still couldn't get out there and play last night. So it's unlikely, I would think, maybe in the Final Four if they're able to get there. So then that takes us to the games today, Tommy. Ole Miss, well, we haven't talked about Florida.
Yeah, I want to talk about Florida because you mentioned how high
Florida
the ceiling is.
Florida loves that.
Yeah, I think how high the ceiling is for Alabama, I think maybe slightly underneath Alabama as far as a high ceiling is concerned, it's probably Florida.
I think the floor is much higher than Alabama's.
You think the ceiling for Florida is higher than Alabama?
I think the floor is higher.
I think the ceiling is right beneath. I think it probably goes Alabama, Florida, as far as ceiling is concerned. They were really impressive, and they have been all season long. They've had, and this kind of goes along the same lines with Bama as well to an extent, is that there are so many teams in the SEC that you can kind of lose track or lose count a little bit. They can kind of fly under the radar. And I think Bama and Florida are the two teams from the SEC that, you know, are getting slept on. People talk about Auburn all the time. And, you know, of course, Kentucky's always been there. In fact, there was more attention paid to John Calipari in Arkansas in the Sweet 16 than there was to Florida in the Sweet 16, right? And so I do think that does help the Gators a little bit, and they looked great last night. I mean, they were able to pull away from Maryland, and it was a really solid performance.
I was telling somebody the UConn game had just finished, and Florida found a way to get it done in that game. And I was like, everybody else ought to be real upset that UConn didn't pull that off, because that's probably the only time for Florida to do that in this tournament. And, you know, pound for pound, they're probably, I don't know where it ended up odds wise, but pound for pound, they're the next closest to Duke, I think. Now, you and I have Houston in there for a lot of reasons, right? But if we're just talking about on paper walking into the gym, Florida's probably right there behind Duke. I actually, if there's a team being slept on and I'm sleeping on them too, I think it's probably Auburn. I think for the number one overall seed to not be anybody's champion. I mean, have you seen a soul that has picked Auburn to win this championship?
I have not. No, like
they're the number one overall seed.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and I don't like. I got them into the Final Four, but that was strictly because, like, if they would have ended up in a region with any of these other teams that we're talking about here, I would have had them in over Auburn, whether it be Alabama or Texas Tech or whether it's Tennessee as a two. Like, had they ended up with any of them, I would have put them in over Auburn. So I'm with the masses on Auburn, but Bruce Pearl's pretty good at this, and he's got a ton of talent on that team. And that's the team I think that's being slept on, and that's the team, honestly, that I think easily of all of these teams has the easiest path to the Final Four. Of all the teams we're talking about, When you have to get through Michigan and Michigan State, potentially, no, you know, I guess I shouldn't put Michigan State in there. I shouldn't put that cart before the horse.
Ole Miss has been playing really, really well.
Yeah. So whether it's even if it is Ole Miss, though, whether it's Ole Miss with 11 losses, yeah, Michigan State or Michigan, like, it's always been that the path for Auburn seems the easiest out of all these teams. Like, look at who, like, if you, let's say, you know, let's just assume, right, that it's in the Houston regional, that it's Tennessee, because I think Tennessee's outstanding. For Houston to have to go through, like, I'll take Auburn's path over all of these teams. Duke doesn't want to play Alabama right now. You think Florida wants to play Texas Tech? Texas Tech, kind of like Florida in the UConn game. Texas Tech, you just saw probably Texas Tech's worst offensive game. Like, they couldn't do anything early on in that game, and they still came back and won that game. So it's really interesting that those two teams match up, because I think they both survived games in which they didn't play up to their standard. And that's probably the only time we're going to see them do that.
And I don't want to hear anything from anybody about, you know, the lack of Cinderellas and, it, you know, it's ruining the game and how, you know, how the tournament has not been fun and blah, blah, blah. Those were high level college basketball games last night, all four of them. And honestly, like the parity amongst a bunch of teams is unlike what we've had recently. Like, you go back to last year, everybody knew UConn was going to win the national championship. They were a buzzsaw, and they ran through everybody, and nobody really challenged them. And, yeah, there were some other storylines here and there, but it was the UConn show. There are, I mean, what, like, out of the Sweet 16, I mean, going back even before those games tipped off last night, out of those 16 teams, there are probably 10 legitimate national title contenders, if not more, 12 maybe, you know, and like the four that moved on last night. And then, you know, you look at the four games tonight. I mean, like, I don't know if we would call Ole Miss a legitimate national title contender right now. I don't know if we'd call Purdue a national title contender right now. But other than that, maybe Michigan.
I would call Michigan. Now, the way Michigan's been playing, played through the Big Ten tournament, I absolutely think Michigan's good.
All the other teams playing tonight and the four teams that moved on last night, every single one of them can stake a claim to win a title. And that, to me, that is what this is all about and why I love it so dang much. I would rather watch that than watch a dominant UConn just beat the brakes off of everybody.
Right. I would too. And I think every tournament like takes on its own life, which I like. I don't want them all the same. But this entire season, we have wondered, until Duke really hit its stride late, I think most people thought Duke was best team in the country, but most of this year, we've been like, who is the best team in the country? Auburn's up there, but everyone's like, yeah, but I don't really think it's Auburn, right? And then there were people like us who were like, Houston is built for this. Houston's going to be really hard to beat. Like, we have debated. There was a time where Tennessee looked like the best team in the country. There have been times where Florida looked like the best team in the country. There have been times where Alabama had massive wins this year. Like, it's gone back and forth a lot this season. And I think that's what we're getting in the tournament, to your point, and why this particular tournament is so interesting, is because it really does feel pretty representative of what this season was. There are some years where the chaos scenario, just a couple of years ago, where was San Diego State, FAU, where you had all these wacky teams in there, at least by seed. Like, there are years where that's super fun for the tournament, too. None of those teams, FAU with the exception, how do you define Cinderella becomes a thing, but none of those teams were outrageous, right? But it was just that kind of year, right? It was the very early parts of the portal, and players were moving around, and it was hard. So I think each tournament gets to take on its own life. It's just so rare that we get actual Cinderellas in this far into the tournament anyway. So rare. So rare. Wichita State, when they made the Final Four, I think some people you might be able to call. If you're calling any mid-major a Cinderella, then yes, there have been those. But if you're looking at like teams that are truly unexpected, and that Wichita State team that made the Final Four, didn't they win the NIT the year before and like bring everybody back?
Yeah.
So should that really have surprised everybody? No, it'd be like Colorado State this year. I think when you're talking about, like, at least for me, it's the teams that had to win their conference tournament to get there. Like those teams. And they just almost never get this far into the tournament. So let's enjoy these high-level teams and games. I'm totally with you. We'll preview the games. We'll make some picks. We'll talk a little more baseball in the next hour. More Sports Daily coming your way.